Thank you for having me. It's a great pleasure to present our upcoming work. Our Barcelona group is quite big. We are half a soccer team. So the coach is David Mateos, our captain Jorge Casaldere Solano, my postdoc colleague Miguel Silao, David's student Miquel Triana, and Carlos Supuerten, his student. The results are fresh from the press, as some plots have been finalized this week. As my title shows, this talk is about holographic shockwaves colliding in non-conformal series, where we want to understand the properties of strongly interacting plasma, which is in non-equilibrium. Let me come to the motivation. We know that one breaks through the RDS CFT bulk properties by introducing temperature, and this work is about breaking the conformality of ADS CFT bulk properties. So the root of this work lies in QCD, and depicted here is the plot from the QCD lattice collaboration Budapest-Wuppertal, which did an amazing job computing the trace anomaly versus temperature. And the trace anomaly, or otherwise named the interaction measure, is simply the energy minus three times the pressure. One immediately sees the sharp rise of the energy at low temperatures, followed by the rise of the pressure component, which gets to approximately 80% of the Boltzmann high T limit. So one needs to go to really very large T to recover the full conformal theory. Especially the big interest of this non-conformal region comes from the relativistic heavy ion collider, where one has searches for the tricritical point around TC, where the non-conformality is the strongest. The holographic shockwaves give insights on far from equilibrium dynamics at strong coupling. One gets, they were the first to get an early or faster hydrodynamization time, and it can be used as initial condition for hydrodynamics. Depicted below is a state-of-the-art collision from asymmetric shocks coming previously done also by the group of David.
Is hydrodynamicization,
yes,
the same thing as local equilibrium?
No, hydrodynamization time is the time when hydrodynamics applies. I will come to the thanks for the question. I will come to the hydrodynamics criteria that we apply and will show plots of the evolution later on. In fact, it turns out that it's not very dependent on the exact cutoff that you choose, but you always recover the inverse temperature relation in the pure gravity case. these plots were computed by the leading edge hydrodynamics group from Brookhaven McGill. And they show why QCD person like me is interested on this shockwave collisions. You see three plots. Depicted on the left is the multiplicity, on the middle the transverse momentum of protons, kaons, pions. And on the right, the flow coefficient V2, V3, and V4. The dots are measurements from Alice for different centrality class, meaning more overlapping or less overlapping collisions. 0% centrality class is fully overlapping. The hydrodynamics simulations are either using only shear viscosity or shear plus bulk viscosity as new input. And the message of this plot is that by adding bulk viscosity, the best match of the shear viscosity is almost reduced by a factor of 2 and is in the vicinity of the famous 1 over 4 pi result. So it's not 0.08, but it's 0.095. Let me remind you that hydrodynamics has not many assumptions. The only assumption is concerns that the mean free path limit going to zero and the conservation of energy and momentum. If you use only the leading term, you have ideal fluid, and then the derivative of your fluid viscosity are multiplied by eta and zeta. So it is not surprising that if you neglect the second term, you need a bigger eta.
Capital pi's are greater than the velocities?
Yes.
So you're assuming that the TBD is linear in gradients?
Yes.
Is that an additional assumption or does it somehow fall out?
Well, there's a great work done by my collaborator Mike Strickland, who also tries to do an anisotropic hydro, where this assumption doesn't go in. And in fact, his work shows that for most of the observable, this assumption doesn't really matter. So it's
not so much anisotropy. You could have terms in the equation that are proportional to square the gradients.
Sure. But
this is the usual assumption, though. Right?
Yes.
Ordinary hydrodynamics is derived. This is an assumption.
Yes. Thank you. I agree. But for phenomenological purposes, it turned out that it's not so much important. So for certain observables in the high PT range, of course, you want to include what you were saying, but here this is not showing this region where you might be worried about those anisotropic terms.
It might even be a good thing to do because I asked some famous statistical mechanicians what happens if you include the higher order terms, and they said, "Oh, the agreement of the experiment gets worse."
No. It doesn't get worse. I mean, the hard thing is. Okay, here for relativistic fluids, the hard thing is to find where the last years Mike Strickland and collaborators from Ohio have worked a lot to find a suitable equation of state for this anisotropic hydro. because here it's much easier to formulate your equation of state who is Lorentz invariant and doesn't violate causality or other bad stuff. Whereas for the anisotropic part, this is a real challenge. The message of these plots is that is the importance of the biviscosity of QCD in ultra-relativistic heavy ion collisions. And here on the lower plot is depicted the input this collaboration was using. Let me remind you that what I forgot to say, that energy and pressure are constrained by the previous lattice calculation, whereas those transport coefficients are not yet been able to be constrained by lattice. In the first part of my talk, I will present the static properties of our model, and then show you an evolution of these shockwaves. The standard model of heavy ion collision depicts it in three different stages. The first stage is the early out of equilibrium part, soon after the collision. Then one forms the strongly coupled quaternion plasma, which has these gradients, shear viscosity and bulk viscosity, and so on. Once it's cooled down, hadronization happens, and lastly, stuff enters in the collider. But these are the three different stages. And it turns out that one can describe nicely the first two at strong coupling. Pioneering work has been done by the group in Seattle. Paul Chesler and Larry Yaffe have first shown that one can solve for the Einstein equation in a characteristic formulation. And did this first pure gravity collisions after based on previous analytic input by Albacete, Gromila, and Romatschke. We will use the dictionary of the ADS CFD duality, which maps for the temperature T to a black hole. We will also use the famous relation of shear viscosity over entropy, the mentioned 1 over 4 pi, and the n equal 4 equation of state, which is some numerical factor n squared pi squared. So let me allow to start with something simple, just the Einstein-Hilbert action with a cosmological constant, and formulate my metric in this particular way, because this way, this is still in vacuum, but the way of writing it down such arises naturally in the context of the solution of shock waves. My Rab factor being A minus ER. The R, the radial coordinate, light cone coordinates, and transverse coordinates, which for now will be of no further importance.
How many dimensions
are we in? ADS5. So the next step is to introduce the scalar potential. So the scalar potential includes the negative cosmological constant, and one again solves this simple metric and gets a relation of the warp factor and the scalar field depending on the superpotential W, which combines the two BPS equation combine to the following, the derivative of the warp vector of the scalar field is the following relation. Our strategy is to use a bottom-up approach, where we will choose our superpotential in the following way, that the potential interpolates between two ADS spaces. So in the UV, we have an ADS space, and in the infrared, we have again an ADS space, and just with a different radius. We want also to introduce a parameter who allows us to vary this out of numerical reason, because one knows conformal shocks are possible, and we want to slowly turn on the non-conformality and to see that we have it under control numerically. So we are deforming the n equal 4 super Young Mills with a dimensions 3 operator. The scalar condensate, which is dual to the scalar field, fine. This leads to the following chosen superpotential, based on also on the previous choice by Gupta collaborator from 2008, where the constant term gets you the right cosmological constant. You have a phi squared term. And then you have the freedom of choosing the higher terms, which in this sense is the phi to the fourth. And we divide with our dimensionless parameter phi m. The relation from the potential to the superpotential given by this leads to the following z-independent potential.
Excuse me. So yeah. Your leading term is minus phi to the eighth. So this,
yes.
The vacuum is unstable. All
right. The vacuum is unstable.
Let's see. I mean, you can ask whether this satisfies a positive energy term. Oh, but you've constructed it from W.
Yeah.
So that usually means but usually V is the W prime square, right?
Yeah, well, that's yep. He has that formula in the last slide.
Yeah, but the reason that is a... W squared term yeah. is negative, right?
That there's a minus W squared.
Well, so Gary, you know the story there. With the right boundary conditions, you can have a stable minimum, even if the potential is globally unbounded.
Right, but this is falling off. Oh, it's still.
It's still exponential.
Okay, yes, no, I'm sorry. Power law is fine. It's not exponential.
That's right.
It's the exponential ones you have to worry about.
That's right.
Sorry, this is fine. Right.
So what we're going to vary is this parameter phi m, where we have the freedom of choosing it, and which. As depicted previously, changes our ADS geometry between both limits. And now you have depicted the potential. The minimum sits at 2 phi m, around here. And the UV limit is here to the left, where one recovers the correct cosmological constant, and you have a negative curvature. Depending on phi m, the shape of the potential changes, of course. So with leading phi m, the minima becomes more pronounced. The goal being to break non-conformality. I come back to the first plot that I had shown from the QCD lattice collaboration, where one one had this nice maximum, and well, only in the very large T, the conformal region. Here we have also in low T a conformal theory, and in high T, and in between we can vary the degree of non-conformality based on this parameter. The low phi m are of course almost conformal, as you can see. This this is almost a line with.
Do you compute this in the bulk by looking at the finite temperature solutions and computing a stress tensor
yes.
on the boundary?
Yes. The other non-conformality measure we can compute is the bulk viscosity. So the bulk viscosity divided by the shear viscosity looks the following, plotted versus temperature. It happens that the maxima of both measures coincide, but the minima of the CS squared doesn't coincide with the value of those maxima. As one can see, we can generate a sizable amount of bulk viscosity.
So are they approaching to one about 4 pi?
Eta is fixed. Eta is fixed. To the value you just said, but the zeta, the bulk viscosity depends on the temperature. What we as mentioned previously, we have also dimension 3 mass operator which we can evolve. And this is the phi 2, which corresponds to the expectation value of the condensate. And this is a new quantity that people didn't see in previous shock waves. So here, this is just a vacuum depiction, and it shows that depending on whatever phi m you choose, we get the correct t equals zero limit. Now I'm coming to the first puzzle where I may have question to you. this is the quasi-normal mode spectrum of this theory for phi m equal 1. There are two different towers. One is a metric tower and one is a scalar tower. These are modes. This is the imaginary rescaled with temperature plotted on the inverse temperature. And on the right side is the real part. So the puzzle is immediately seen. One has the metric towers are nicely working all together, both on the real and imaginary part. Most of the scalar towers also go in sync, but there's one mode who seems to have a very strong decreasing value, and this depends on the phi m of the theory, which mode it is. So it can be the first scalar mode, it can be the second scalar mode, or third, or fourth.
So it becomes unstable, or it's other direction, I mean, this imaginary path?
It's kind of diving. I mean...
So it's more stable? So imaginary path decreasing or increasing?
It's harder to excite. I don't know if you call this more stable.
No, I mean, okay, if you imagine a path is smaller,
it
would say that's,
more quickly,
yeah.
You're saying.
Yeah.
That's what this, yeah. I'm just checking the sign. So it decays more rapidly.
Yes.
As you lower the temperature. Because that's.
Yes, this is. Yeah, the challenging computation is the low T temperature, and the low T temperature is going to the right of the plot, as you're saying. And we check this with full back-reacted codes, the modes. And we did also an independent computation by shooting of those modes to check their value. But we don't yet understand the physics meaning of why one mode behaves so differently than the other. If you see it similarly for phi m equals 3, here it is the second mode who is diving. So it looks like those are approaching, but they are not. These are not actual crosses, because if you plot it in with the real parts together, they are on a different point in the imaginary plane.
Is this all at k equals 0?
These are k equals 0 modes, yes. Okay. All k equals 0 modes. I think a similar decrease has been seen in Reisner-Nordström quasi-normal modes, but I'm not sure what of the physics here of this mode. Of course, from the hydrodynamics point of view, the most interesting one is the first the value of the first imaginary part, because this is the mode with the highest frequency and has a direct connection with the hydrodynamization time. So the lower this maximum goes up, the faster, the more the scalar should slow down the theory.
There's coupling between the scalar and metric perturbation.
Yes.
So when
yes.
you say a scalar mode, you've included the corresponding metric perturbation?
Yes. I mean, this is
the
blue is the pure metric, but the red one is the scalar scalar part.
And metric.
Yeah. Yeah, it has metric. Yeah. And what people were getting from quasi-normal modes analysis is that compared to the conformal value that you get in the UV, you can at maximum get a factor of 2. And this we recover also. So this we had seen with, I don't have the plot now, where this is phi m equals 3, but for phi m equals 10, this value divided by this value gives exactly this famous factor of 2 slow down by the quasi-normal modes. Okay. Any further question to that? So now I'll be jumping to the shock waves, the full back-reacted evolution. I will shortly introduce the initial time slice metric and then show you various quantities that we evolved. So. As mentioned previously, one may set up the metric the following way. The difference being that here this H is now the Gaussian of the shockwave. The nice coincidence that we found is that the warp factor of a shock and a vacuum stays the same. Sorry. So this is a nice coincidence of the chosen superpotential. We use, as mentioned, a Gaussian profile for the shock waves. And one has to solve an additional second order equation for the initial data, which for gravity would just be 1 over r squared. Here in this case, it's a simple second order differential equation where the phi dependence stems that r, the metric vector r, depends on your scalar field. And the chosen phi m value. So this was in Pfeffer and Graham. For the evolution of the shock waves, one does the coordinate transformation of this initial data in Eddington-Finkelstein with the following ansatz of metric, which is a nice behaving metric for the Einstein equation because they decouple in simple ODEs. So one gets, you have first to solve for B, which gives you in turn the sigma, and the next metric coefficient follows. In order to solve, one doesn't need all the Einstein equation. For example, the f dot is one that one doesn't need for the evolution of the system. It's just used as constraint equation to check how well your evolution behaves. From the field theory interpretation, these shocks are fully constrained for pure gravity. They have a velocity of speed of sound and move in ADS space. And for simplicity, as mentioned, they are homogeneous in the transverse plane. So let me allow you to show you a visualization. This visualization is an output of a C code that, let me stress this, does not read any input file. So all the input of the initial data is now computed on the fly. It has already shot the geodesics, this initial data, and now you have the dual shock waves for colliding on real time. The computer is currently solving the Einstein's equation in the background as I'm speaking, and you have the two shock waves who collide. It's the first time that I show this visualization. In the background, you see the code who is outputting some checks for us. And what you will soon see is the forward creation of the plasma once the two shocks have passed through each other. They are not very thick shocks that I had set up. So this is the boundary value. It's A4, it's the local energy density at the boundary of these shock waves. And now you see the plasma creation in the middle of these two shock waves. And soon you will be able to have this on your phone.
You have an app to solve.
Yeah. So we want for Marie Curie, I have to do some outreach. So we want to enhance this in 3D and have it nicely.
Batman.
Sorry.
Batman.
Yeah. You will see the both shocks will disappear and you will just have the plasma in the forward light cone. So it roughly takes this laptop computer 3 minutes to do this full evolution, and it's really solving it in the background. There was nothing of this code was preloaded or pre-saved. Of course, this is only possible if you program it in C. So, this is the pure gravity one.
But if it would be just one wave, it would be kind of going stable, or it would also kind of instability will show up. You have the shock wave, let's say, but not collision.
No. I mean, I cannot solve the scalar one in 3 minutes. I mean, the scalar the scalar Einstein equations blow up, so one has many more terms. And okay, the simulation finished now.
So that was the pure vacuum case.
This was a pure vacuum case of the usual shock waves, just showing off that we have nice fast code. The 3D visualization of what you had seen is this, and this is for the scalar case. This is a postmortem analysis of what the code when it saves the energy density. It doesn't, for the energy density evolution, it doesn't look much differently. The interesting difference comes now related to the first question about the hydrodynamization time. So when is hydrodynamization time occurring? So the black line is the output in over time from the transverse pressure, and the blue curve is the extracted hydrodynamics value of the transverse pressure. Of course, in early stages, this extraction makes no sense, but one sees it quite rapidly. The two lines quite rapidly join each other, and the criteria is that the PT minus the PT hydro divided by the local energy density should be smaller than 0.1. Then one says that the hydrodynamics time is reached.
What are the units of time?
The units of time phi equal 1, and for shock with a Gaussian width of 1. So it's not in physical units. One can also transform it in physical units with transverse energy density profile. We haven't done this yet, but
is there a result like it's hydrodynamicizes in a short time?
Yeah, I mean, you will see, I will extract the dimensionless factor where this doesn't matter, and it's slower, but still fast. To get the hydro extraction right, you have to put in the correct equation of state. The red curve would be if you would be using the ideal equation of state, so you would see that those never match. And you have also to get the bulk viscosity right, because if you would simulate, if you would extract the hydro with zero bulk viscosity, you would get a very late hydrodynamization time. Of course, the same story applies for the longitudinal pressure. The interesting point that has been always given is that at hydrodynamization time, these pressures are, of course, very different, the longitudinal and the transverse pressure. This is already in the case for pure gravity. What is different now by adding the scalar content is that the times are different. So the hydrodynamization time of the longitudinal pressure or the hydrodynamization time of the transverse pressure may differ, as both pressures are now related by a non-trivial equation of state. What we can study now is, let me come back to the non-conformality measure. We can now scan the parameter space for different T and different non-conformality, and extract afterwards at which temperature this certain run has hydrodynamized. So it might have hydrodynamized this red dot or higher this orange dot. And then we can see which time is slower or faster. And of course, what you expect is that in high T, in the conformal region, you want to recover the conformal hydrodynamization time. And here you expect a slowdown. The biggest slowdown we saw is to the left of the peak. The reason is that the plasma had the time to go through this region of the peak. Because, of course, as you had seen previously, the energy density of this plasma doesn't cover this full range because it hydrodynamizes that quickly. So if you hydrodynamize here, the evolution will go through this curve, but will not be kicked out of equilibrium. Okay. And here's this factor we were speaking about, this dimensionless factor. So if I have the time of hydrodynamization multiplied by the temperature of hydrodynamization in the conformal case for 1/8 shocks, which are thin shocks, a bit thinner than the one I had shown in the simulation, one gets this dimensionless number of 0.26. We can do now our scan for the temperature, extract for every value of phi m the slowest one, and this gives us a dot here. I plot this ratio of the thermalization time, the non-conformal divided by the conformal. In the case of zero, it's of course one. And then you see this factor increasing. And this is a preliminary result. So these dots may get even higher. So we still have cases where we still need to improve the numerics to fully extract those values. The green dots that are depicted below are the one from the linear analysis of the quasi-normal modes. What one can conclude is that at high non-conformality, the non-linear regime is the one who is the important one and giving you the most of the slowdown. Because the green, the maximum is 2. Even if you push it to higher non-conformality, this saturates. Whereas for the non-linear regime, up until now, we didn't see a saturation yet. As mentioned, we get the time evolution of the bulk viscosity. So this is, for example, one run where one has a sizable bulk viscosity over the time of this evolution. In this case, it's a run on the right of the maximum because its value increases, but we have also run where we see this value decreasing. Now let me come to the new observables that people haven't been able to see up until now. So this is how does the scalar condensate react to those shocks? And it is very different. So from a hydrodynamics point of view, one can say that it acts like a dissipation because what I had been shown previously is that around 1/2 at times 1 or 2, the system is in hydrodynamics applies, whereas for the scalar condensate, one sees at those times it is still fully out of equilibrium. The black again, the curve extracted from the code. Yes. And the blue is the hydrodynamics extraction. Of course, the early time doesn't make sense, but here, after having reached hydrodynamization, we can extract an effective temperature. And for this effective temperature, the value of the scalar condensate would follow this blue line. Again, one can conclude that hydrodynamization not necessarily means thermalization of the media. And this is seen for various phi m. So the previous plot was for phi m equals 3, which has a sizable bulk viscosity. But already with a small bulk viscosity, we see this huge difference in the scalar condensate, because this is for phi m equal 1. And so it doesn't have such a big conformality breaking.
Is that a surprise? I mean, I thought you needed hydrodynamics first, and then thermalization came later. Right?
No, it's not so much of a surprise, because I mean, also if you look, it's similar for these pressures. I mean, these pressures are very different. Also, hydrodynamics applies. But still, it's nice to see how huge the difference is. I mean, the time scale here I'm talking is like a factor 10. I mean, we evolved here really for a long time, till 30, whereas the previous plots I was showing for the hydrodynamization time, I stopped at 10. And it applies around here.
So by thermalization, you mean approaching completely thermal?
Yes, yeah.
So there would be thermalization on different scales, right? So four scales approach equilibrium first, and then the whole thing approaches equilibrium. And that's exactly what the Möbius hooks for routine say.
I see.
So the scale that you're showing here is the scale for the whole system.
Sorry, is the scale?
The scale you're showing for thermalization here is the whole system.
They don't include inhomogeneities. I think that your whole run.
You go to parallel.
Yeah, I mean.
It's translation invariant.
They're plane symmetric, so they don't see small scale.
I mean, our stuff is big enough that we can simulate big systems that it doesn't reach the boundary. I mean, the fast simulation that I was shown had only a small z support, but the simulations that I'm showing there have a much bigger z support, so there's no boundary effects of the simulation in z. So let me show you another small video. It will restart immediately. So this is scalar content of this shockwave collision. Here is the axis of the two colliding shocks. This is the radial direction. And one sees at early time two nicely separated bumps that overlap and then have this creation of and stay out of equilibrium for this long time. Let me conclude. This is the first simulation of a holographic non-conformal model of heavy ion collisions. I've shown you that hydrodynamics works early despite a non-trivial equation of state and significant bulk over shear viscosity. The most significant result is that we can get hydrodynamization time to slow down by bigger than a factor of 3. I mean, I've shown almost 4, and we have simulation who go beyond this. One sees that hydrodynamics applies while the scalar non-conformal mode are still fully out of equilibrium, And we have much more studies on the way. We might be able to, I mean, we want also to look at different other potential and see see the responses of the shock waves. Thank you very much for your attention.
I have a bunch of questions. The first one is, I would assume that we were to do this in something a little bit more like QCD, the scalar would be dimension 4 rather than dimension 3, because that's what we would expect for the Liouville mode as you approach the.
Well, dimension 3 is easier because you have the ADS renormalization. I mean, the full procedure was done. I mean, we wanted first to be able to see if we can do this scalar shocks. But I agree.
So the thing is that if you're going to compare to, let's say, QCD, I would be suspicious of using something of that dimension. And the second thing is that I would assume that the potential would be more like an exponential than, because that's what your little roughly suggests.
Well, I mean, there are people out there who have phenomenological matched potential, so we can use their potential. The thing is, what do you match to? So you have the choice: either do you match with the interaction measure of QCD, or do you match with the relatively unknown bulk viscosity? So here you have a certain freedom of choice. Because bulk viscosity is not constrained yet by QCD.
I'm trying to understand. But I mean, the thing is that in QCD, you will have, apart from the scalar, also something that takes care of the fact that the hadrons that you're colliding have a proton number. So you also need a maximum field floating around, just for a chemical potential of this stuff, just to make something that is a bound state that kind of holds its shape without any external input. So it's not dissipating as you evolve.
So Wilke is doing this Maxwell, but they didn't see much changes. So I mean, it's possible to add, of course. I mean, it gets more complicated once you add more.
But that's preferred transverse size because you have.
No, of course. I mean, going to higher dimension is a clear goal because you don't want those to be planar shocks. But I mean, you want to play with the centrality of the shock waves, how central or not. And Larry Yaffe and Paul Chesler have shown this year that ADS5 pure shockwave collisions are possible. Their code it was a huge challenge for them to get it. So it takes them roughly 6 weeks to generate an initial data profile, and then 6 weeks again to do a slow evolution of this. I mean, our code is quite fast, so I think we can generate this initial data even in 5 dimension faster than this 6 weeks. And we will definitely go this. I agree, this is very interesting.
Another question?
Yeah, just from the field theory point of view, is there any understanding of the link between the increased nonconformality and the longer hydro time?
The increase of?
The increased nonconformality.
So you're speaking of this
slot,
of this kind of line that you're explaining. Well, I mean, the more bulk viscosity you throw in the system, it's expected to take longer. Of course, one can think of when, what do you need, what's the limit of to break hydro, And this we haven't reached yet. So I just was visiting Paolo Comacchio, who is also a leading hydro expert, and he was saying that our bulk viscosity is still mild. So we can, he was asking to crank it up by a factor of two to get a more realistic evolution here.
Questions? Okay, if not, let's have the speaker here.